The president knows that taking decisive action now will allow the United States to reap the economic benefits of the clean energy revolution.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care.
In this episode, Business Forward hosted a briefing with Chair Brenda Mallory and Director of Public Engagement David Kiva, both at the White House Council on Environmental Quality, for a discussion on the administration's plans for climate change and environmental justice. After opening remarks and a brief Q&A with Chair Brenda Mallory, David Kiva answered additional questions from business leaders across the country, covering topics ranging from emerging clean energy technologies to emissions regulations. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Everyone, I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward. We are delighted to host the Chair Brenda Mallory and David Kiva, the Director of Public Engagement, both of the Council on Environmental Quality. We host these briefings to give small business leaders like you a seat at the table to share what's most important to you. We'd also like to thank the many local and state organizations for joining us and inviting their members, including the Hispanic, Black, and AAPI chambers across the country. We've asked Chair Mallory to discuss the administration's plans for climate change, environmental justice, and other CEQ priorities. Chair Mallory, thank you so much for joining us today, and I'll hand it over to you for your opening remarks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for that introduction, Liz. I'm so grateful to be here today and happy, wish I could see you all out there, but happy to know that there are many people out there who are interested in hearing about the work that we're doing at CEQ and different ways to engage. I really appreciate being invited to join the group today. As some of you probably know, I am the 12th chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. And one of the opportunities that I really enjoy is getting to kind of meet with a broad range of stakeholders across the country who care about CEQ's work. This group has been a tremendous partner to the administration throughout our brief time here and even before. And so I really do look forward to how we can partner and work together as we are kind of moving forward. President Biden has noted that while the climate crisis poses a clear threat, it also presents us with an opportunity to create 21st century jobs, to innovate at an unprecedented level, and to advance environmental justice across the country. President Biden recognizes that the well-being of our economy is directly linked to the well-being of local businesses, the communities in which they reside, and the workers that power them. To this end, the president has committed to strengthening working communities, reinvigorating the economy, and advancing equitable policy solutions. There's been quite a lot of news out of the White House recently, in particular about the bipartisan infrastructure agreement in last week, and I'm happy to take questions on that at the end. I'm also eager to hear about the work that you all are doing and the ways in which we can build partnership around the president's agenda. So I hope we get a little of that before I have to leave. But quickly, I want to tell you about some of the exciting initiatives at CEQ. Today, I'll focus specifically on three areas: environmental justice, clean energy infrastructure, and federal sustainability. President Biden's approach to environmental justice is guided by a few of his core personal beliefs. First, that every person has a fundamental right to drink clean water and to breathe clean air. And second, that for too many people, we have failed to deliver those basic protections. The burdens associated with climate change, harmful pollution, and decades of disinvestment in American infrastructure have disproportionately fallen on low-income communities and communities of color. A few statistics in particular are worth noting. First, Black people are almost three times more likely to die from asthma-related causes than their white counterparts. In addition, more than one in three, or over 23 million people, Latinos in the United States, live in counties where the air quality does not meet EPA public health standards for smog. Across a number of consequential policy areas, environmental justice disparities present tremendous challenges for all of us in government and in the business community. Reversing decades of environmental injustice will require a long-term commitment, but acknowledging a need for change and creating a plan of action are critical first steps. That is why, as an administration, we are incorporating equity for historically underserved communities throughout our policy initiatives. We are seeing many of your efforts to do the same, and we applaud the work that you're doing, like the work of Stephen Wilburn, Business Forward member from Newport Beach, who has spent decades working to deploy clean energy, water purification, and wastewater treatment technologies in communities that need it. Or the work of Kimberly Hill Knott, Business Forward member from Detroit, Michigan, who has built coalitions to develop city-based climate action plans that center environmental justice communities and needed investments like local workforce development. Or the work of business members like United Airlines that has established partnerships with organizations like Air Alliance Houston to advance environmental justice. These collaborative efforts to address our climate crisis in a way that grows our economy and uplifts equity help create the space for ambitious action. So the importance of the on-the-ground work that you all lead as executives, entrepreneurs, and small business owners cannot be overstated. My team at CEQ is working with every single agency to take a whole of government approach to pursuing environmental justice while addressing climate change. That means, for example, looking at how the federal programs work and asking whether all communities are receiving the benefits intended. It also means looking at whether the emission standards adopted to protect the public are sufficient to protect communities living in pollution hotspots. We also are developing a climate and economic justice screening tool at CEQ. This will help us identify and target the communities most in need, and it will inform equitable decision making across the federal government. There's a lot of work underway and a lot more to do, but we are committed to making a difference in this area. Turning now to the clean energy work we have underway at CEQ, the president knows that taking decisive action now will allow the United States to reap the economic benefits of the clean energy revolution. Through the American Jobs Plan, President Biden will significantly expand America's clean energy infrastructure. There's a massive role for business here as we build out this infrastructure. One example is electric vehicle charging stations, where we are looking to build on partnerships piloted around the country. From National Grid, working with the VA in Massachusetts, to Southern Company and American Electric Power engaging with DOD in Georgia and Texas, respectively, to Xcel Energy coordinating with DOE's National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Colorado. With our partners, we are continuing to push on new research and other supports for innovation. And finally, with a focus on federal sustainability, CEQ is leading the charge on some ambitious initiatives so that the executive branch walks the walk in meeting our collective climate and energy goals. CEQ is working with every agency across the government to create climate action plans, ensuring that we are leading the way in preparations for a net zero emissions future. The federal government owns a massive fleet of vehicles, and the president has pledged to make them all electric. This will increase demand for American-made, American-sourced electric cars and trucks. CEQ's federal sustainability team is working hard to ensure that the federal government is in a position to lead by example. So in closing, let me frame the challenge as we are seeing it. Our charge is to think broadly and inclusively about how to strengthen our economy in ways that protect our environment and improve the quality of all Americans' lives now and for decades to come. Yes, that means deploying clean energy, modernizing our grid, and protecting our public lands. It also means building healthier neighborhoods and addressing disproportionate pollution that in historically marginalized communities. We have a chance to make a real difference in people's lives. In order to do so, though, we must ask the difficult questions. How do we ensure our federal investments are actually reaching the communities they are designed to help? How do we tackle the climate crisis while also recognizing that its impacts do not affect all of us equally? How do we ensure that everyone can reap the benefits from the clean energy economy? This is our challenge, and we can do this, and we can do this better. But we can't do it without partners like you. So this is my ask of you. Work with us so that together we can build out an equitable clean energy economy. If you haven't already, articulate your near-term climate goals. If you support the American Jobs Plan, say so. If you support some of the American Jobs Plan, say so. Together, let's transition to a clean energy economy that everyone can benefit from. Thank you again for the work that you do, and thanks for inviting me to join you today. I'm happy to take a few questions.
Thank you, Chair Mallory. And we received a number of questions from business leaders across the country, some of which you mentioned in your opening remarks. The first one I'll bring up is on jobs, just jobs. Rob Brazel, the president of Project Return to Work, Inc. in Boulder, Colorado, asks, we have the ability to help recruit, train, and place thousands of Americans in clean energy jobs. What government programs should we try to tap into? Can you give us any specifics?
Yeah, so thanks so much for that question, because as you know, the president also says jobs in response to many things every time he's talking about climate change. I think there are some existing programs already that DOE and USDA have to support clean energy activities, like the Rural Energy for America program and conservation block grants. But the best opportunities in this area would be established as a result of the American Jobs Plan, the American Families Plan, and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Framework. These programs reflect the president's vision and will enable America to build resilient and sustainable infrastructure and ensure all Americans have access to clean water and invest in research and development for clean technologies and innovation. So let me hit a couple of examples from those plans that are out there, which I'm sure many of you have already seen. First of all, the United States Innovation and Competition Grant is a program that advances major research and development investments that's outlined in the American Jobs Plan. And a couple of the sub-bullets, there's in that plan, $17 billion for the DOE National Labs, which is one of the front lines of pioneering climate breakthroughs. There's $29 billion for a new technology directorate at the National Science Foundation in support, again, of climate-related, and high-performance computing and advanced manufacturing, which are going to be important in natural disaster prevention and mitigation. And then also, there's a $14 billion for manufacturing extension partnerships, manufacturing kind of U.S. tech institutes and regional hubs that will help strengthen critical technology. In the bipartisan infrastructure framework, there's $55 billion in clean water infrastructure, with that including actually eliminating and replacing 100% of the lead water pipes and service lines. This would be the largest one-time investment in water infrastructure to date. There's also $5 billion to clean up brownfields and Superfund sites to address legacy pollution and other harms that affect public health. And then there's $16 billion to reclaim abandoned mines. So these are some of the top features of these plans that the president has suggested, worked to encourage. And we think that they're going to be really important in actually meeting the needs as we see them in terms of addressing both climate change, but also just the lives of people in general. One final one I'll mention, because I know it's gotten a lot of attention, which is the $10 billion investment that would go towards the Civilian Climate Corps. This is a program that would actually help diversify a generation of Americans to work in conserving our public lands. So I'll stop there.
That's great. Thank you so much. The next question we have is from Tanya Myers Phillips, who's in Detroit, Michigan, who works at the Sugar Law Center for Social Economic Justice. And her question is on environmental justice. So she would like to know, what are your policy priorities and initiatives to protect community members residing near industrial facilities and along industrial trucking routes from air pollution? And what are your plans to expand the use of community benefits agreements?
Interesting. That's a great question. And I think actually is an area where, at least in my view, the opportunities for partnership with the business leaders and community leaders is going to be so important. In the American Rescue Plan, EPA would be provided $100 million to address health outcome disparities from pollution and from COVID. We're seeing on the COVID front, we're already seeing that there's serious long-term effects of COVID, even in people who have recovered, and that these things are going to actually exacerbate sort of respiratory effects that people will experience, making like air pollution and other localized air pollution more significant. There's also $50 million for EPA to increase air quality monitoring. This is an area where disinvestment has occurred over many, many years, probably even many decades. And the opportunity to actually put in place the kind of monitoring systems that will actually give us the information to assess the kinds of impacts that people are experiencing and that are related to some of the health impacts is actually an important area. And then finally, EPA also has $50 million to help communities that are facing sort of just the disproportionate burden and pollution. So that's an area where the plans are really focused on a recognition that there are impacts that people are experiencing now, and we want to get a handle on how to address them as we're thinking about new ways of addressing some of the environmental justice problems.
That's great to hear. The next question we have is on the National Environmental Policy Act, or the NEPA. So Larry Liebeson, attorney at Smelson Mason in Columbia, Maryland, asks, what is the CEQ schedule for revising 2020 NEPA regulations?
Great question. Hi, Larry. I guess the short answer is, we are working as fast as possible to review and evaluate the 2020 regulation, consistent with President Biden's executive order, which basically told us to look at that regulation and to ensure that it's sort of consistent with the statute and with the president's overall agenda. And that's an agenda that sort of focuses on ensuring that we have data-based decision-making, that we have community engagement, but importantly, that those decisions are made in a reasonable timeframe. And so that process of examination is underway. Today, was published in the Federal Register, an interim final rule that will extend by 2 years the date that agencies have in order to update their regulations consistent with the 2020 reg. And that was really done in recognition that we are on a path that where changes to the rule seem likely, and that having the federal agencies sort of work and put resources into updating their agency-specific rules to be consistent with a rule that we're likely to change didn't seem to make sense. And so that step was taken. The deadline otherwise would have been September of 2021. And so they are sort of free to not follow through on that. But I think the point is, on the NEPA regs, we have already signaled in several different filings that we see some concerns that we're examining that relate to climate change specifically and to environmental justice communities and to how those issues are reflected and can be addressed under the 2020 rule. And so we're going to continue that work and hopefully before the year's out, we'll be in an active rulemaking phase.
Sounds great. Thank you. So I know you have a full schedule today. And so I just have one last question from our Clear Network on how they can get involved. So Harvey Bronstein in Southfield, Michigan asks, how can we get the business community, including small, medium, and large businesses, to enthusiastically participate in what we're talking about today?
Love it. Love the question. And I would say, actually, the work that was done by Business Forward to create forums like this is a really great first step, because giving administration officials an opportunity to speak to your members and also to give your members an opportunity to kind of provide some input and thoughts, I think is really important in helping to connect the communities and the administration in terms of the issues that are being done. So I would say more of that is great. Specifically, though, I would also just encourage your members to, you know, as I said, sort of in my opening remarks, let's take the opportunity for those issues that you are in agreement with the administration to kind of be vocal about that, to take steps to actually develop your own kind of climate goals and priorities, goals that we would hope would include equity, and to be vocal about that. Because for there to be a broader sense that there is a community, and a broader community of folks who are working towards these issues is very important, and I would say very powerful. So I sort of encourage folks to sort of take those steps. And then I would say partnering with other local organizations is a way that you both can have the same effect broadly within your own community around issues of addressing climate change and growing the clean economy. And so I think all of those things would have the effect of really, you know, getting people inspired. And then, as I think we've said, and David probably will say, even when I drop off, collaborate with us. I mean, we are here, we are willing to engage. We're looking forward to working closely with your members and with others. And so take advantage of that opportunity. I think that also serves an important role in making sure that the issues that we care deeply about are also issues that other people can be excited about.
Thank you, Chair Mallory. I'd like to invite David on screen with us. And I understand, Chair Mallory, that you may have to drop. So we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much again for inviting me.
Hi, David. Welcome back. So I want to reintroduce David to the group. David is Director of Public Engagement at CEQ with Chair Mallory. I'm not sure if you wanted to give any kind of top line remarks before we dive into some more questions we have for the network.
Yeah, I'm terrified of the questions I'm going to face. So I'm going to fill up as much of our remaining time with me just meandering and talking in a stream of consciousness kind of way as I possibly can. No, I'm only half joking there, but I would love to share a little bit about who I am and what I'm doing and why I'm so excited, and then dive into additional questions. I'm David Kiva. I have the distinct honor of working for Brenda at the White House Council on Environmental Quality as the Director of Public Engagement, but I also sit informally with the White House Office of Public Engagement, where I have the great, great pleasure of working every day with Business Forward alum, Jana Platt, and others on the team. But the significance of my position there is that to the degree that the White House thinks of people who are motivated by an interest to take action on climate as a constituency, and I think we do, my presence sitting with them acknowledges that they are, in fact, a constituency and can speak with one voice. So one thing, it's actually a little bit far afield from what Chair Mallory was talking about to this point, but that I'm really excited about is that tomorrow, we all know that it has been a huge priority of the presidents of the countries and of the whole administrations to get as many shots in arms as we possibly can. And Business Forward has been a tremendous partner in that effort to this point. Tomorrow, we are organizing all of the climate people via the largest environmental groups in the country to take a climate day of action. They're going to be phone banking in the evening via a partner organization called Made to Save. Throughout the day, we'll see sort of social media takeovers, and all of the biggest environmental groups in the country are going to be encouraging all of their members to raise their hands and say, I'm a member of X organization. I'm a climate person. I'm vaccinated. It's important to me, and I'm calling on all my friends and loved ones to do the same, because it's the only way that we're going to beat this thing as a country and fully get back on path. So that's one of the types of things that I'm doing at the White House, and one of the things that I'm super excited about. I want to say, if you view yourself as a climate person, as a business owner who is motivated by a desire to see us take corrective action to address the climate crisis in a substantive way, please raise your hand. Please reach out. As Chair Mallory said, we want to partner with you. So Brenda already touched on a little bit of this, but I also thought I would share a little bit about what I'm hearing in answer to a question that I heard from Jim Doyle from Business Forward when we were chatting in the green room about what the climate folks and what the big climate groups are thinking and how they're feeling right now about this bipartisan framework. We at the White House are excited, because we've heard the president consistently say two separate things. The first is that he badly wants to see a bipartisan infrastructure deal come together and move forward. And as of last Thursday, it seems that we've had a breakthrough on that framework, and it seems that that's moving fast apace. And he also has said over and over again that the climate crisis is one of the existential threats facing our country and our ability to continue to live on this planet, and he's gonna treat it as such. I think for a lot of folks, there was some nervousness that those two statements were somehow incongruous. We think they're moving in concert. We feel great about the climate elements of the infrastructure package that has been negotiated. Chair Mallory already spoke to many of the details around that, but we also feel really good about the ability to move forward to address in a more holistic way some of the needs of the climate crisis via a budget reconciliation package. And we've been very, very clear. The infrastructure bill is an infrastructure bill, not a climate bill. But as business owners, we've heard questions already about how can we be involved? How can we raise our hands? How can we participate? It's simple. Tell us and tell your neighbors and the American people what you need. We all know that we need better roads and bridges in this country. But we all also know that roads and bridges alone aren't going to adequately address your needs as business owners and help make it a competitive landscape. So that's my song and dance at the top. I will now smile my way through trying to evade any questions that you guys have.
Thank you, Dan. We're gonna hold you to it. So I'm gonna batch these questions so you can try to answer both of them in the same attempt. So the first is on the transition to clean energy, the second's on emissions reductions. The first is from Chip, the founder of the American Renewable Energy Institute out in Colorado. And Chip asks, what are the opportunities for the US to become the world's leader in pricing and sequestering CO2 and making the transition to a global hydrogen economy? The second is from Joe James, who's an executive at Agritech Producers in South Carolina. And Joe asks, should federal incentives be greater for technologies that excel both in carbon capture and in environmental justice? So I'll leave you with those two to try to address.
So yes and yes. The first question is really timely. Tomorrow, we will be releasing to Congress a report on the administration's view on how to smartly and correctly and without causing any environmental harm for any localized communities, invest in carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration. So part A is stay tuned, but if you care about this stuff, there's a big, weighty, meaty report coming your way tomorrow. The president has been very, very clear and consistent. I'll take a step back for a second. We all read a lot of stories about what's going on in politics and in the world. But for me, at least, and I think for some of the folks who are listening and watching, there are some that just sort of stick in your mind that you keep going back to over and over again. I think it was in the late summer or early fall, Reuters did a piece where they interviewed off the record CEOs of a number of electric utilities about the ambitious Biden climate plans. And their takeaway was, well, there might be a way for them to get it done, but it's going to take enormous focus, enormous progress, and it's going to take the development and advancement and scaling of technologies that don't currently exist yet at scale. And some people said, oh, this means they can't do it. What we said was, well, of course all those things are true. If it was going to be easy and we could do it tomorrow just by snapping our fingers, we would. So the president's been consistent and clear that carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration is an important piece of our overall plan to reach net zero by 2050 and to dramatically reduce our emissions over the next 10 years. It's a bit of a longer play, right? Because getting it to scale is going to help a lot more, we think, from years 2030 to year 2050. But making those investments, investing in demonstration projects now, and taking some of the steps that Chair Manchin and the Energy and Natural Resources Committee has been suggesting are absolutely going to get there and help us get there. And if these investments pan out and the technologies are able to be scaled, it's going to be a massive part of our clean energy future. What we've heard from the business community, and I'm sure that many of the folks who are watching and listening at home feel similarly, is it's well and good to have a tax credit, but it needs to be a longer term tax credit in order for businesses to adequately plan around it. So we're looking at a 10-year extension of a big swath of clean energy tax credits, including for carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration over the next 10 years, so that executives like the folks who are members of Business Forward can make informed decisions that best reflect their estimation of what their bottom line is going to look like, not just next quarter, but 5-10 years down the road.
That's great. Thank you, David. Next, I'll go to the role of government in what we're talking about today. So as best you can from your seat, what are the new efforts directed by federal state programs that will help enforce stronger consequences for states that do not implement some of the clean, safe, and environmental friendly changes that you're speaking about? And that comes from Cynthia Cole out in Katy, Texas.
That's an excellent question. I think that's something that we're going to be very focused on once we've gotten on the far side of legislation. But I think the general orientation of the president, and something that we all try to lift up and emulate, is that he's really, really proud of the fact that he's laid out this supremely ambitious climate policy that has attracted broader public support and support from more corners than we've ever seen for such an ambitious climate plan. And I think the main reason why that's the case is that there are two ways that you can work to tackle the climate crisis. I'm probably being overly general here, but I'm a simple guy. It's how I view the world. You could either regulate or you could innovate. We are much, much more focused on the innovation side of things. And as the president says, the climate crisis is an existential threat, but it also creates an enormous opportunity. So we're focused on the opportunity for job growth in clean energy. We're focused on the opportunities that states have to better serve their constituents. And tomorrow, the president's going to sit down with a number of governors from throughout the Western United States, and he's going to do some talking. He's going to do some thinking about how to help them solve their problems. But he's also going to do a lot of listening about what their needs are. And right now, they're facing a triple threat of extreme heat, drought, and wildfire that is really plaguing the Western United States. It's a hot, muggy day here in Washington. But as I've looked every single day, as I look at the weather here, I've looked at the forecast for Phoenix, Arizona over the past 3 weeks, and there hasn't been a day when the high hasn't reached 115 degrees, and we're still only in June. So I think there are a lot of folks out there across the country who are hurting. They're looking to their government for some level of help. They're looking not just for empathy, but for real sort of concrete solutions about what they can do. And we're going to work with our state and local partners to do as much listening as we do talking to help to shape those solutions and better serve the American people.
Thanks so much for that. I think that transitions nicely into another question about environmental justice, which Chair Mallory addressed the first one, but I'll leave the second one for you. Cindy Squires in nearby Arlington, Virginia asks, how can manufacturers help with the environmental justice goals?
That's an excellent question. And that might well be the stumper that I've been fearing to this point. But I think the way that manufacturers specifically can be most helpful in addressing environmental justice, again, I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to get back to the reasons behind why we are setting things up the way that we are setting them up. I was a part of the campaign and pleased to help lead a lot of our environmental justice work, which again was much more focused on listening than talking. And one of the things that we heard from environmental justice stakeholders everywhere was that it's important that they have a stronger voice within the White House. And so there are two ways that we are at CEQ specifically helping to honor that request and raise those voices. The first is we have chartered a new advisory council, the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, that reports to Chair Mallory. And it reports to Chair Mallory for a reason. Environmental justice advocates wanted to have a voice that was within the White House and was closer to the president himself. So that's one way in which people are lending their input. Another way is we also have an active role in helping to lead the White House Interagency Council on Environmental Justice. So making sure that every single agency within the federal government is taking actions to honor the commitments we've made to address EJ and move the ball forward. But going back to that first one and the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, we heard it was more important to listen and to offer a seat at the table and to meet with advocates and community members and ask them what they need. You've heard Chair Mallory say that we're going to be developing screening tools that will go all across the country. I think if manufacturers want to have an active role in determining their community impact, talking to the folks in the communities that they live in and work in, and offering a seat at the table, if our experience is any example, that step of saying you're important, we want you to be heard and we respect you, goes a very, very long way towards establishing trust. And then more broadly, if you like what you're seeing out of this administration and the historic focus that we're placing on EJ and on environmental justice and on getting it right, please use your voice as a member of the business community, as a manufacturer, to lift up and say so, because we've talked for a year now. The Build Back Better plan is about to take some first steps. It's about a year old. We believe, and the president believes, that you can't truly build back better unless you have a focus on equity and on building back fairer too.
Understood. So I'll wrap up our last topic on public health. We received a number of questions on these, so I'll just read off two of them quickly for you. The first is from Robert in Dunedin, Florida, who asked, man-made toxic exposures can cause unanticipated and long-term impacts in humans as well as the environment. What's your plan on addressing these harms? Scott Smith in Lexington, Kentucky asks, will there be any movement on air quality standards and water quality standards?
Those are the much feared stumpers that I can't quite answer. On the movement on water quality and air quality standards, I would just say, broadly, I can't get in a position where I'm saying, yes, we will do X number of days or months from now. So stay tuned on that front. On toxics, that's an area that is far outside of my expertise and knowledge base. But my limited understanding is that there was a new federal framework written into law late in the Obama administration to reinvigorate how we think about the regulation of toxic chemicals in this country. But it was never an area of focus during the prior administration. So there's kind of a new car. It's been sitting in the garage for 4 years. I think we got to take it out, take it for a spin and see how well it works and then see whether it needs additional tweaks and changes from there. So that's an incredibly big picture answer to a relatively granular question. So I apologize for that, but hopefully it's at least somewhat responsive.
No, I appreciate it. Sometimes you need the granular questions in order to be able to see the bigger picture. So I appreciate your response to that. Before you go, David, I just have one last question, similar to what I asked Chair Mallory on her way out. And I'll use Kelly Kennedy in West Hartford, Connecticut's question to tee me up. So she asks, what are three things employees could do to get their company leadership, their coworkers, even their building managers engaged to take meaningful climate action?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And West Hartford is a lovely place. I went to college in Hartford. I think use your voice. Communicate that it's an expectation that you have that the company that you work for is going to have a role to play in helping to solve the climate crisis. I mentioned sort of key milestones and things that stick with me. One of the reasons why I think we've been able to make so much headway in terms of talking about climate and working to identify solutions is that the American people have come around on it in a big way. So to the degree that you as an employee of a company can communicate to your leadership of that company that you expect them to be good corporate citizens and act on climate, you should do that. Another good conversation that Chair Mallory and I just had was with a union that represents building managers. And they talked about an innovative training program that they have where building managers and janitors and custodial workers learn about the role that they can play in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and also in saving a massive amount of money for the buildings where they work in terms of energy bills, just by doing simple things like turning off the lights and by changing light bulbs to make them more energy efficient. And what they conveyed to us was the amount of pride that folks have as they go through these training programs and they learn that they have a role to play in addressing the climate crisis is tremendous. So I think at some point in the future, we're gonna see folks like Chair Mallory and others roll up their sleeves and participate in training programs and work with folks and see firsthand how people are learning the role that each and every single one of us can play to address the climate crisis.
That's great. Thanks so much, David. So that's all the time we have today. Thank you everyone for joining us. We hope you'll join us for our next briefing. Keep an eye out for more information from Business Forward. Thank you so much to the CEQ team. Thank you to Chair Mallory, David Kiva, and everyone who joined today's briefing. We look forward to working with you all again soon.
Thank you everyone for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanen. Thanks for listening. See you next time.